Today is Thursday, November the 30th, 2017. We're going to hear Rav Moshe Soloveitchik Shir on Parshas Vayishlach.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Jer.
It's very nice to see all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. I do want to mention, Rav Moshe, that Dan Goldstein wanted to take care of this class tonight in the...
To sponsor it, right,
in the name of his mother, who he just finished saying Kaddish for the entire year. So he's not here right now, but I'd like to say that this class is being sponsored by him in the merit of his, in memory of his mother, his dear mother. If you could take your cell phones, please, and if you could silence them, that would really be a very nice thing to do. We're going to be davening mincha. Excuse me, Marv. Sorry, thank you.
Jerry Zachasid.
A Chabadnik.
Yeah, time doesn't mean anything.
So we're going to daven Marv. You know, a few minutes after the class. By the way, Dan, I mentioned that this class is being sponsored in memory of your mom. But it could be in your mother's memory also, because you just finished a year of St. Paul's. What's your mother's name?
Gedal Yohu Ben Dover.
And his marriage. When's the Yahrzeit?
Friday night. Tomorrow night.
Okay. So silence your phones, please, your cell phones. Yeah, we're going to be davening Marv in a few minutes after the class. And I'd like to thank Young Israel for being so generous and kind. And those people who helped to set up the class, and those people who helped to step in the food, helped me. I really appreciate it. So I want to thank you publicly. I want to thank Rabbi Berger. Allowing us to have this class here for all these years. We appreciate the generosity, all of us, so I want to thank him for that.
This class is sponsored in memory of Gedal Yohu Ben Dover, Dr. Goldstein's father. And also, we want to welcome back Rav Pinchas Eisenbach, who was in Eretz Yisrael.
Pinchas, are you traveling?
Where's in Eretz
Yisrael?
All right. The end of this week's Sedra discusses the descendants of Esav. I've already discussed numerous times the different comments. Who cares about who the descendants of Esav were? Why does the Torah have to tell it to us? And the Rambam, I mentioned the Rambam. The Rambam says because there's a mitzvah to wage war at certain times against Amalek. But Amalek in was a descendant of Esav, but the mitzvah of waging war is only against Amalek. So in order to distinguish between Amalek and the other descendants of Esav, the Torah tells us who the descendants of Esav was, the tribes. So we should know that there is no mitzvah of waging war against them unless it's a war of defense, which unfortunately happened many, many times. And then I mentioned the thought of the Brisker Rav, that the reason it mentions it is to show us how Esav started his nation immediately, whereas Yaakov doesn't start the nation till after the Jews leave Egypt. And they go in exile for 210 years. And what's that? That's to show that he is the true successor to Abraham. Because Abraham is told, Ki ger yezarecha beretz lohem, your descendants will not start their nation. They're going to be immigrants. They're going to be slaves first. So to show that Esav was not considered the successor, and Yaakov was considered the successor, the Torah tells us about the nation that Esav established almost immediately. And the commentaries are somewhat troubled, however, by another point, and that is at the end of the Sedra, after telling us about the chieftains and everything, it says there were seven kings in Esav before there was a king in Israel. So some say, well, Torah was written by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is considered the first king. Okay, others give other explanations. But what's interesting is, when the Torah lists the seven kings of Esav, who were kings before there was a king for the Jewish people, the Torah tells us where they came from. Let me read it to you. The Torah says, now these are the kings who reigned in the land of Edom before a king reigned over the children of Israel. Bela, son of Beor, reigned in Edom. And the name of his city was Dinhava. It's a lot easier to read in Hebrew than in English. Okay. And Bela died, and Jobab ben Zerach from Batsara, he became the next king. Why does it tell us, this is the question the commentaries tell us, okay, you have to tell us who the kings are, but why do you have to tell us from what city they came from? Why do you have to tell us from what city they came from? So all kinds of explanations are offered. Some say that really the kings only reigned over their individual city, whatever it is, but the Rambam and the Sephorna and the Radak, they say something extremely interesting, but each one emphasizes a different point. And I want to bring out the differences. They all say that the reason is because in Esav, when it came to appointing a king, they did not appoint a king from within their own ranks. They always had to go to a foreign country to appoint a king. You know, there's an expression, "Ein Navi Biro," there is no prophet in this city. It's difficult to become a leader from within your community. You know, the older people say, oh, I remember you when you were in diapers, you know. So... I remember you when you did such and such, and we don't have to get into that stuff now. You can read about it in the newspapers. Anyway, so, ain't Navi Biro, there is no prophet in his city. So that's why it lists the cities to point out that they came from foreign places. They were not king. They did not originate within the Esav community. That's what the Rambam says. And the Rambam goes on to say, and that's to distinguish between the Jewish people and Esav. Esav's kings do not come from the descendants of Esau. As a matter of fact, it could be suggested. You know, it is the Mechilta says in Shemos, the Torah says that we should remember that God, Kimocho Emcha Ezechar Amalek, God says, I will destroy the memory of Amalek. So the question is, why doesn't it just say, I will destroy Amalek? Why does it say, God says, he will destroy the memory of Amalek? So one of the answers given in the Sephorna is, Amalek? That's Amalek, the nation. Memory of Amalek. Why that extra word? That's Agag, the king of Amalek. So the question is, Agag was part of Amalek, part of the nation of Amalek. But we can understand it now because the kings of Esav, and Amalek is from Esav, so the kings of Esav came from other nations. So Agag himself was the king of Amalek, but he wasn't, he was not what we call genetically Amalek. So the pasuk comes to say, I will not only destroy, God says, I will not only destroy Amalek, I will destroy the king of Amalek also. One of the, you know, and that's one of the questions. One of the questions is, why didn't Shaul kill Agag? Shaul didn't kill Agag. But we could say that Shaul rationalized that the Agag himself was not a descendant of Amalek. He was the king of Amalek. Therefore, he didn't kill him. Okay, but there's another question. I don't consider it a difficult question, other than the fact that people ask it. It's one of those type of questions. You know, you have certain questions that you have to search for the right answer, and if there are 10 answers, 9 of them are wrong. And there are certain questions that there are 100 answers, and probably all of them are right. It's really not a big question. But this is one of the questions. You're not allowed to keep anything from Amalek. Even some assume, I really don't understand it that way, but some assume, they explain some drushos to mean that not only you couldn't, Amalek has to be destroyed, but you're not allowed to keep some of the things that Amalek owned. So the question is, Haman, the spoils of Amalek. Haman came from Amalek, right? And the house of Haman was given over to Mordechai. So the question is, how could Mordechai take Haman's house? Really,
he was burnt.
Yeah, right. Anyway, so there's some that say that, not that way. They say the house belonged to Achashverosh. Okay, but in any case, Haman, we say, was a descendant of Amalek, but really he was a descendant of Agag, who was the king of Amalek. So it could be that law didn't apply to him, except when the nation of Amalek, if he had been there at the time the nation of Amalek was there. Well, the nation of Amalek wasn't there. Okay, but that's not the point. The point is, they're emphasizing the point that the kings of Esav, the kings were not appointed from Esav. It was from outside Esav's community. And the Rambam says that's the contrasted with the Jewish people. Because with the Jewish people, we always, with the Jewish people, we said, Mikerev achecha tosim alecha melech, from the midst of your brothers, you shall appoint the king. You can't go outside to search out for a king. It has to be from your midst, from the midst of your nation. That's how the Rambam explains it. In other words, it's to make show a contrast. I want to understand the contrast according to the Rambam. The Sephorna,
He gives the same answer as the Rambam, that the reason they mentioned the cities is because to show that the kings did not come from Esav. They had to take outsiders. But he doesn't say to contrast it with the Jews. He says it's to show that they didn't have any descendants who were worthy to be king. That they were worthy to be king. Now, I want to focus on the differences between these two approaches. Why is the Torah, certainly according to the Sforna, why is the Torah so interested in telling us that there weren't any descendants of Amalek, of Esav that was worthy of being king? Why does the Torah tell us that? Who cares? Okay, we know why we need to know who were descendants, who were the kings. But why is it important to tell us, according to the Sforna, that they weren't worthy? Who cares? It's not our history. I need to know about the history of Amalek. I had to know, of Esav. I needed to know who was from Esav. But that I have to know that they're kings? Why, I'm going to walk around thinking about their kings? Why is it important? Now, and then I want to explain the Rambam's explanation. Okay, but now, in the past, I've discussed the question as to why Yitzchak was thinking of giving the brachos over to Esav instead of Yaakov. And I mentioned at one time, once mentioned it to Rabbi Luzovsky's synagogue, so Rabbi Luzovsky told me that explanation my father gave. And then it's true. I looked it up, and my father wrote it in his book. But I want to add certain things to that explanation, and I've mentioned those things here. When the Torah tells us about Avram, the Torah paints a picture of Avram. If you'll see a picture in school books of Avram, what's the picture you see of Avram? You see Avram sitting on a chair or lying on a whatever it's called, a cot of some sort by the tent. And in the far distance, you see three people coming. But where does Avram stand? Pesach HaOel. Avram is standing at the entranceway to the tent. What does that show? That showed that Avram, on one hand, he was close to his tent. And on the other hand, he was involved with people. He was waiting by the entranceway to the tent to see who might be passing by. It might be three Arabs, not descendants of Yishmael, obviously, but just nomads who walked through the desert. And he wanted to give them to eat. He wanted to give them to drink. He wanted to give them to rest. But what's the identifying feature of Avram? The identifying feature of Avram is that Avram was involved with people. Yitzchak was more withdrawn. But even by Yitzchak, the Torah tells us, "Vayetze Yitzchak l'suach b'sada." Yitzchak, he might have been in the tent more than Avram. But he would go out from time to time to the fields. And some explain Lasuach Basada, some explain it from the Aramaic word to speak. He went to talk to people, to have conversations. But how does the Torah tell us Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Olam? Yaakov stayed in the tent. He didn't leave the tent. So Yitzchak thought Yaakov did not have leadership ability. He had spiritual identification. but leadership ability he didn't have. And he felt that that leader, Yaakov, couldn't give over leadership ability. So because of that, he wanted to give over the leadership to Esav, the spiritual direction or whatever, to Yaakov. In a sense, as I always say, he wanted to make, I've mentioned it here just recently, he wanted to make Yaakov the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, and Esav the king. But Rivka understood it's not going to work. So it's very difficult for a rabbi to get along with a president of a shul. Anyway, but certainly if the president is Esav. I happen to have a very good president. Mr. Radloff is he's a Yaakov. Okay, yeah. All right, so he didn't hear me. Okay, but what's the idea? The idea is, and I mentioned that Rambam Mor Nevuchim says, Sulam Utsavarza, the first dream Yaakov has when he runs away was of a ladder going up to heaven and the Malachi Elohim, the angels of God, going up and down. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim says, who are the angels of God? The angels of God are the Nevi'im, are the prophets. And the prophets are the ambassadors, the shlichim, the agents, the messengers of God. So, a matter of fact, a malach means a messenger. And a navi, a prophet, is also a messenger. So prophets are called malachim. The Hebrew word for angels is sometimes used in regard to the prophets. So what's the idea of going up? In order to be a prophet, first you have to perfect yourself. But once you get high up on the ladder, you have to go down to fulfill your mission.
That's right.
Okay. But when you deal with malachim that come from heaven, you start from up. But if you deal with malachim that come from earth, you have to go up first and then go down. Okay. So why here? I think the simple answer is very simple. This is the message to Yaakov. Yaakov, till now you stayed in the tent. You perfected yourself, and you were perhaps right in doing it. But there comes a time that you have to go down the ladder to fulfill your mission, to be the leader of the Jewish people for future generations. What does it mean to be a father of the Jewish people? To be the leader of the Jewish people. So that was the message given to Yaakov. So in other words, there was a perception, perhaps a false perception, that Yaakov did not have leadership ability. He didn't have the traits necessary to be the leader of the Jewish people. But Esav, they thought, had those traits. What the Torah wants to tell us, on the contrary, long term, if Esav did have leadership ability, he wasn't able to give it over. And on the contrary, Yaakov was able to give over leadership ability. How do you see that? You see, when the Jewish people have to appoint the king, who do they appoint? Mikarev achecha tosim alecha melech. From your brothers you appoint the king. The Torah tells us you should know there are people that are deserving and will be able to act properly as leaders among your midst. You don't have to go outside to get leaders. But when it came to Esav, you could search all you want, but generations down the road, there is no leader among, no one worthy, no one capable of being a true leader. They had to go outside. So the Torah here comes to tell us about the mistake that Yitzhak made. The mistake, the mistaken perception that there was, that Yaakov didn't have leadership ability. But the idea is, to be a leader, you have to perfect yourself first. And then you can go out and be a leader for others. Unfortunately, today, people try to become leaders of other people first. And unfortunately... Huh? That's something that doesn't work. There was I think they say in the name of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter that first you have to work on yourself, and then you work on your family, and then you work on your community, and then you work on your nation. And unfortunately, we have people who first work on their nation. They want to be leaders of the nation, and they don't work on the other things that are the prerequisites for that. So this is, and by the way, that's on both sides of the aisle. Okay. Okay. Now, but then I want to go in to explain the Sforna's answer. The Sforna said also the same thing like the Rambam. But he says it. I want to explain the Rambam. Excuse me. The Rambam said also, like the Sforna, that. But he wants to show the contrast between the Jewish people and Esav. Not so much to show that there wasn't people in Esav, but the contrast. What's the idea? I think the idea is. That now, the Medrash tells us that the Jewish people circled around the Mishkan in the same order that they carried the coffin of Yaakov when Yaakov died. So they were the same way they were situated around the coffin in that same order. Carrying the coffin, that's how they were situated in the desert around the Mishkan. The question is, what's the idea behind it? And also, it's very interesting, there were four sides to the Mishkan. And each side had a flag, the Medrash tells us. One flag had on it the letters of Aleph, Yud, Yud. Aleph, Yud, Yud. It's no words, so you don't have to try to figure it out. Okay. The second flag had Beis, Tzadik, Ayin. The third flag had Reish, Ches, Kuf. And the fourth flag had Mem, Kuf, Beis. What is that? If you take all these four flags together, you have the words Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov. What's the idea? But I think when the Medrash tells us that the Jewish people were camped around the Mishkan in the same order that they wore in carrying the Aron, the coffin of Yaakov. Now, when is it the last time that people come together really as a family? It's at the funeral of the matriarch or patriarch of the family. Afterwards, they become tribes, and that's lucky. Families, it's usually the matriarch or patriarch of the family that hold the family together. And afterwards, what held them together as a family is no longer there. Listen, I remember, okay, today that's not the practice. It's the practice is in the reverse. But I remember when I was a young boy, he still had a certain European sense in the Jewish community. Came Yontif. All the children and grandchildren were by the grandparents' and parents' house. Where they slept, no one knows, but you can have tons and tons of children. Everybody was there. Today, the parents, each yontif, they go to another kid. But in those days, it was different. All the kids came, all the children. All the children and the grandchildren, they came. You came yontif, you saw, in shul, it was three, four generations coming in. They were all together. They were held together as a family by the parent or the grandparent, whoever it was, held them together as a family. The Jewish people were meant, yes, we had to be a nation. But what very often happens when they become a nation, they lose that sense of family. They become a nation. We speak of a George Washington being the father of our country. But there's a difference between George Washington being the father of the country and and Avraham Avinu being the father of the Jewish people. When we speak of George Washington being the father of the country, we don't think of it in terms of family. We think of it as being the first president, the first leader. But when we speak of Avraham Avinu as being the father of the Jewish people, Yitzhak as being the father of the Jewish people, Yaakov being the father of the Jewish people, we think of it in terms of family. Because the Jewish people were meant to not just be a nation, but to be a family. If the Jewish people did not have this perception of family, they would not have been able to survive the exile of 1800 years. A nation, to be a nation, you need a country. But any other group that went into exile, they ceased to be a nation. Because it's the land, being on the land, that kept them as a nation. But by the Jewish people, being a nation and being a family are interwoven one with the other. When you have family, it could be family member on the other side of the ocean, there's still a connection, an emotional connection. When you can have communication, there's still communication. There's a connection of communication. But when you have a business relationship, or whatever it might be, and then that relationship breaks up, it's goodbye. If you meet, you say hello. And if they move to the other end of the world, you don't even know that they ever were there. So, in other words, for the Jewish people, yes, we had to organize. And why is it necessary? I always talk about the point that the Jewish people had to go through slavery and exile before they established themselves as a nation. Why? Because there is a fear. Once you establish yourself as a nation, you give up that sense of family. So, but what brings family together is hardship. You sense the pain of the other person, even when you yourself have pain. In Egypt, the only reason the Jewish people were a nation in Egypt was because they considered themselves family with one another.
when we're not on the land, what keeps us as a group is the fact that we have this family connection. So I think, and this is the idea, even after Yaakov died, they had to keep that sense of family. And what's interesting is, if you're able to keep that sense of family, where even after the matriarch or patriarch died, to a certain degree, the matriarch and patriarch are still alive. But when you break off into different groups, all of that is in the past. And that was the idea, that the idea that the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash now, being at the center of the Jewish people, held them together as a family, just as they were at that last moment at the funeral of Yaakov Avinu. I think that's the idea. The difference between the Jewish approach to leadership and the Esav approach to leadership was, we say, Mikerev Achecha Tasim Alecha Melech. You point the king from among your brothers. When you appoint the king from another nation, he might give up his loyalty to the other nation, although very often he doesn't. But that sense of family is weakened when you appoint the king from within the Jewish people. Then you're strengthening this concept of Mikerev Achecha, of the idea of brotherhood, of familyhood. I think that's the idea that the Rambam is trying to say in the Maran Avuchim. It's to contrast the difference between the kings of Esav and the kings of the Jewish people. Esav went to Seir. He started a nation there. He gave up. He left Yitzchak. But for whatever the reason, which from our perspective, that was very good, he wanted to start a nation. And the nation was not grounded in the concept of family. Whereas Yaakov didn't start the nation right away. But the sense of family got stronger, and that remained once they became a nation. And that's what the Torah wants to point out to us. Esav's kings came from outside. They didn't have that sense of family. Yaakov, his descendants, Mikerev Achecha, there's the sense of family.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Please clean off the. Be so kind as to clean off the tables, and leave the tablecloths on the tables.
They both say.
And in about 2 minutes, we're going to be davening.